You are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay first aired on May 18th, 1984.
Hi, I'm John Weeks, and this is The Nature of Things, a program about the world we live in, presented by FM 90 and the Rice Creek Field Station, a unit of the State University College at Oswego. It's been a cold, wet spring. A lot of people are complaining about it. Gardens unplanted, grass growing so fast you can't keep up with it, what with the rain. And everyone telling me it's a late spring, and I guess that's right. But at least in one area of spring phenomenon, I can report that things are right on schedule. Already I've found 6 robin's nests with 4 or 5 eggs each, a rough grouse nest with 13 eggs, a phoebe's nest with 4 eggs, a brown thrasher's nest with 1 egg. In that case, I scared the female from the nest, apparently just after the egg had been laid. And I've also found tree swallows and bluebird's nests. All of this suggests that birds do cope, even when the weather doesn't seem to want to cooperate. They've been known to make some pretty unusual adjustments to overcome problems. And the nesting season provides some of the most unusual examples of wildlife ad-libbing that I know of. My earliest recollection of an Audubon folio print framed and hanging in the living room of a neighbor was his whimsical treatment of the house wren nesting in a high crown felt hat. That hat, a fuzzy stovepipe, was impaled on a dead stub, brim against the vertical trunk. Other wrens have been known to nest in old boots, loose gutter downspouts, pans, pails, and other unusual paraphernalia. Louis Agassiz Fiordes pictured a bluebird nesting in a rural mailbox. And there was an apocryphal story in my hometown about a robin which nested on the caboose of a commuter train and raised a brood of young ones while shuttling between Rochester and Niagara Falls. That one, I think, is a bit far-fetched, but it does illustrate the reputation which robins have earned for bizarre nesting arrangements. Every year during my youth, at least one such example surfaced. Robins nested on the axles and wheel spokes of wagons, the motor of a little-used Model T, the seasonally used floodlight of a hometown park. In that case, the nest was cemented to the top of the huge bulb. That would have provided quite a hot seat for the robin, but park officials disconnected the light until the young birds had left the nest. When I was director of the Rogers Center at Sherbourne, I lived in an old stone dwelling built in 1836. As was usually the case with large houses of that era, we had fireplaces and stovepipe holes all over. Some of them were operable and some not, leaving unused chimneys which seemed to have a strange and sometimes fatal attraction for wild things. Chimney swifts, wood ducks, bats, and flying squirrels nested there, and numerous songbirds became entrapped there, sometimes ending up in the fireplaces. We welcomed these unusual guests, but on occasion problems arose. Once a hen wood duck got caught in the lower regions of the chimney and had to be rescued through the clean-out door. Another time, a family of flying squirrels took advantage of the ledge created by a stovepipe hole. Somehow the inquisitive young pried off the cover and got into the space between the wall and the newly installed kitchen cabinets. Apparently it was a one-way passage, however. Once in there, they were trapped, so they began to chew. My wife suspected small rats or mice. We'd just seemingly won a drawn-out battle against them, and she wanted them out of there pronto. Reluctantly, we loosened the cabinets, no small feat in itself, and since we had expected to find less desirable members of the order Rodentia, we delighted in the charming brood of flying squirrels which tumbled from behind the cabinet. Another unusual one I remember was a nest of a chickadee in an iron pipe right in our front yard. Chickadees usually nest in wooded areas where they frequently use the punky stubs of aspen, birch, or cherry. The pipe in question is right in the open, about 40 feet from the kitchen window. It's a remnant of an old pedestal the former owner placed there to mark the position of the dry well, which received the wastewater from the kitchen. It's just about a foot long, screwed into a round metal base about 10 inches in diameter. The base is buried, and normally the projecting stub is covered with a bird bath. My wife spotted the chickadee going in and out the pipe in mid-May. "I wonder what it's finding down there," she mused. "Who knows," I replied. "Might even be considering for a nest site." I made a mental note to examine the pipe, but somehow I lost the note. If I'd remembered, I would have found the cavity at the bottom of the pipe lined with downy material, and perhaps by then containing 4 or 5 white eggs, lightly spotted with reddish brown. When my wife, noting that this chickadee continued to pay regular visits, peered into the pipe with a flashlight, she found 4 pairs of shiny black eyes and miniature chickadee faces staring up at her. If we hadn't been in the process of moving to Marcellus at the time, we would have enjoyed the experience of seeing those things come out of the pipe eventually. As it was, we didn't, but it sure does show that wildlife can find some strange ways to cope when it needs to. Well, that's all for this week. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.